We all know that cars mean traffic, errands, and budgets.
But they should also represent freedom and fun. Join us as we work to find everyone a car they'll love. I'm Paul.
I'm Todd. And this is the Everyday Driver Car Debate. There's an awful lot of chrome at SEMA.
There's shiny everything and carbon fiber.
Look over here.
I didn't know you could make out of carbon fiber.
Yes. Look over here. And this is very loud. And by the way, we are grinding something. And this person's lifting up a car on a lift. And by the way, there are people at SEMA putting tires on rims live. I'm not sure why, but Triangle Tires was there, which made me laugh. I took a photo of Triangle Tires. And I actually got it. I should post this photo. I actually got it at an angle where you can see the logo twice. And it looks like a triangle just for fun.
I found the hall that is actually all automotive everything in the Westgate Hotel. I didn't even know existed.
Uh-oh.
They brought paint booths. Multiple paint booths for car. Everything was in there. I'm astounded. And it looks so funny to have all these automotive tools that belong in greasy shops.
Yeah.
And then they're in the pristine carpet of the ballrooms and everything. It's very strange looking.
Yeah, SEMA is nuts. It's Happy Friday. We've just gotten back from SEMA. And here's the thing. The show in the parking lot is bigger than most shows. And that's those are the people that don't rank high enough to get inside the convention center yet.
There's the tent purgatory over here and people trying to work their way up. But if you have a spot, even in the mid-range kind of halls, you don't ever want to lose that. You don't ever want it as a company to say, well, we're not going to go this year. We'll go next.
Yeah.
You'll lose your status.
Yeah, we met a company a year ago, actually, that they were in one of like the extra rooms where you got to go down two extra hallways and then you find them. You're going, where is that 71,000? What? Where are they? We met that company and they said, yeah, we used to come every year and then we didn't come for 2 years and now we can't get back in the good room.
Yeah,
it's
they're
crazy.
Relegated to
it's crazy.
You know, back of the line kind of thing, which is crazy. Yeah, some of you have asked about SEMA and things that were our favorite and things that stuck out. It was horsepower. It was the amount of money and effort, because I look at things through the lens of work, and to get something looking like that, forget the money, just the amount of manpower and man hours to complete a build, to complete something, there's just an astounding amount of work. And so we're walking outside looking at all these huge lifted trucks, and there's a slight glaze in my eyes. And I told Chance was with us, and you know, I said, if I walk down that row, it's going to be just like everything that I'm currently seeing. So why don't we skip that?
Yeah.
But we're wondering, this particular truck was unbelievable. The top of the tire was taller than the hood of the Jeep next to it. And the hood of the Jeep was a lifted Jeep.
Where you and I stand, we could walk underneath the chassis just full height. It's craziness.
So here's the ridiculous part. We're thinking, where do you drive this truck? What do you do with it? Mm-hmm. Well, the answer is you back it off the trailer. Mm-hmm. You drive it to the corner at the show that you're exhibiting at. You take the photos.
Yeah.
And then you drive it back onto the trailer and take it back to the shop where it lives. That's
excellent
all
point.
You do, because they're too heavy. They'll sink into mud. You don't want them off-road. You don't want any of that. Real off-roaders will scoff and laugh at some of these wheel and tire combinations.
Oh, I don't even need to be a real off-loader. I will scoff at some of those wheel and tire combinations. There was a company there, and I don't remember their name, and that's probably good because I don't want to give them like a counterproductive shout-out. They had what they claimed were off-road wheels.
Uh-huh.
And they were probably 30s, and each wheel must have weighed 150 pounds. Forget the tire.
All this unsprung weight to these things.
And there was no upgrade to the brakes, and so it was just like no off-roader on the planet. And then you have, I mean, this is a huge tire, bigger than like, picture a huge round coffee table, bigger than that, okay?
Yeah.
And yet I kept thinking, in spite of that, you don't have a whole lot of sidewall on that tire. Like the guys that are heavy duty in Moab, their rims are barely bigger than a dinner plate, and the whole rest of it is tire. This is the other end of the spectrum. You're claiming to be off-road wheels. Very weird.
All right, some notable things. The first one is this Elephant engine, or the Helephant 426 Hemi, which is essentially a 7-liter engine, 426 cubic inches that Mopar has released with 1,000 horsepower, 950 pound-feet of torque. And what's so funny about this is we met the guy who works at the company that is the tier one supplier to FCA, to Mopar, for parts.
Mm-hmm.
And they supply all of the Hellcat engines, so they do all of the superchargers.
Mm-hmm.
They're actually a turbo company, but he said, unbeknownst to most people, they're supplying all the superchargers for all these cars.
Yeah.
And he said, He desperately wanted to tell us more, which is really
funny.
We
met him the day of the big reveal, and he told us about every little piece you possibly could say without actually telling us this is exactly what's happening. He was so excited.
Here's the reveal. You guys should come by the booth at 4:26 p.m. because we're going to reveal something. If you put two and two together, we're going to reveal something big at 426. He kept saying that.
But hang on, hang on. The thing that makes me laugh about this is an established company now selling a 1,000 horsepower crate motor. This is how obscene the horsepower wars have become.
Let your imagination run wild now. American Racing Headers already dumped the Hellcat engine into a Prius last year.
Yes, true.
They've tracked it and raced it and done the things that you do with a Hellcat-powered Prius.
1,000 horsepower crate motor.
Yeah.
Because essentially because we can. It's not necessary. There's not a car out there that desperately needs it, and yet we're all going to sit around in our free time and think about, what could I put that in? Wouldn't that be fun?
Something else that actually was kind of cool that you and I began to have a bit more appreciation was these campers, off-road campers.
Yeah.
And sure. One company we ran into, I took some photos. It was Patriot Campers. Hadn't heard of them. And these are essentially trailers that you tow behind your rig, your pickup truck, whatever. And
they don't look like an RV. They look like a utility trailer.
They're this compact thing. And then once you open it up, the tent pops out of the top. You didn't know that was going to happen. And everything is utilized. The space efficiency is better than a boat.
Yeah.
And it's astounding. And so they have these special swivel hitches that will, you know, give you the articulation for off-road travel and all this stuff. You know, because a regular hitch, I mean, even though I'm sure people have done it, you want the extra articulation because you don't want your camper sliding down the hill when you're traveling off-road.
Well, and these are built for serious off-roading. I mean, they had more than 2 feet worth of ground clearance. And yeah, you're talking about the swivel hitch. I mean, that would go anywhere. As long as your tow vehicle can go there, the trailer can go too.
I mean, you can take the cooler full of steaks and fish and all this stuff.
Bring it. Yeah.
You're out in the middle of nowhere. And it's almost like car camping at the next level because you're even further away from the humanity of, you know, all the slots in the car park of the campground that you're at. And you're But it brings all the amenities with you. And I'm having this appreciation for it.
For sure.
Still want an earth roamer and I was liking some things. It was very different. It was touching some different parts of my car love. Yeah.
It's really in that part of you that likes the post-apocalyptic things.
Some part of you is
actually like secretly shopping for the zombie apocalypse, and none of us know why. Maybe you know something I don't. Maybe that's the problem.
But yes, otherwise there was just general craziness and supercars galore and drifting galore, and we were watching the Roush truck and Mustangs go drifting and spinning. You could get a ride in those. Kia had their Telluride out there. They're introducing their new SUV, Stinger rides.
There were multiple tracks set up around the convention center for different types of companies and vehicles. It was crazy. And I have to say, this made me laugh. We had a meeting with our contacts at Discovery because, of course, they were there. Mm-hmm, of course, the Discovery is now – Velocity is being rebranded as the Motor Trend Network. If you didn't know that, surprise, Velocity is becoming Motor Trend Network.
Yeah.
And so they're trying to figure out how to do all that. So we had a meeting with the Discovery Channel and our contacts over there. And I'm not kidding you when I say our meeting was ended when the drifting started outside. When the drifting started, we all kind of went, well, okay, this meeting's over. Nobody can hear anything anymore. I guess we're done. Good to meet you guys. Good to see you. Thanks for being here. Yeah.
I mean, Continental, they had their big track set up, busily converting all their products into noise and smoke with a fleet of BMW M3s, F80 M3s, so you could pack the car full of people and, you know, everybody's hanging out
of
the car. It actually reminded me of some of those videos you've seen in Arab countries, you know, where they're
hanging out of the cars,
drifting, doing all this stuff. Yeah. And I think it's probably, for a lot of people, first time ever being in a car that's drifted professionally.
Without question. You can tell by how they're hanging on to the handles in the back that this is not a normal experience for most of those people. So SEMA is wonderfully nuts. It was cool to be there again. And also, sometimes you just walk by some of the stuff and you for the next three or four booths, you don't see anything because you're just shaking your head about, I just saw that. That just happened.
You honestly become numb to things because then you turn the corner and the next crazy lifted, there's two snowmobiles on the back of that huge lifted pickup truck, along with an ATV. There was another Jeep on the back of a Dodge Ram lifted. What?
Well, think about the largest one of those Polaris four-seater, everybody strapped in off-road family ATVs. Think about the largest one you can think of that.
Yeah.
Now that, inexplicably driven up ramps into the back of a pickup bed where the front wheels are actually over the cab of the pickup, and then the pickup's been jacked up, and the whole thing's been painted camo, and by the way, that's all we have in this room.
I continue to ask, why do I not see these trucks? I now live in a state where these trucks apply, and I never see them driving around.
No,
they're
of course
too
not.
Shiny. They're too perfect.
Yeah.
One nick in those rims, you're crying in your soup, and I just, the amount of money and time into
it's
these
shocking.
Things.
Yeah.
And then I want to see him out there. But then there are the section of vehicles that are, okay, these are true off-road people.
Yeah.
These are,
like
you
those
know,
trailers
small wheels
yeah.
with the big tires, because that's what real off-roaders do.
And, yeah.
You know, that kind of thing. It's
very funny.
Very interesting.
So we're finishing up with that, which is actually related to the reason we go to SEMA, honestly, is because we hang out with, not only, obviously, we had a meeting with Discovery, but we hang out with the sponsors for our TV show.
Right,
like
right.
Covercraft and Griot's, we went to both of them because they're already on for season 4, which is great. And thank you guys.
Yeah,
we have
we're
more
thrilled.
Coming.
We're
but
thrilled.
We're able to actually see sponsors from all over the nation that we've only talked to on the phone. We can meet them, have face-to-face conversations, which is really cool, which is why we go.
Yeah, it's a wide variety of sponsors and people there,
it's
too.
Very it's very cool. So we're amazing. Back from that now. We're thinking about season 4 a lot, but that brings up this reality. Season 2 has just gone to, I may have to explain this, has just gone to free on Amazon Prime. If you have Amazon Prime, you have access to Amazon Video.
Explain it in movie terms, I guess. That's,
yes,
that's
that,
helpful.
That's fair. But if you have Amazon Prime, you have access to Amazon Video, which feels kind of like Netflix, where I paid a fee and now I can get all this free stuff. You can, but unlike Netflix, the stuff that came out last week, like the latest Avengers film, let's say.
Right,
if that came out on video last week, you can get it right now on Amazon. Now, it's not free. Mm-hmm. It won't be on Netflix for 6 months or whatever, but you can pay for it now, rental or buy, and you can get access to that right now. Like, for example, I have a 9-year-old. We just bought Incredibles 2.
Of course you did.
Now, 5 years from now, Incredibles 2 will be free on Prime. But
sure.
right now, I had to pay for it.
Sure.
Because,
well,
of course,
maybe a year from now, it might. You
it
know.
Might be. So we're going to watch it into oblivion. So, of course, when we saw it was there, my wife just went, we're just going to have to buy that, aren't we? I went, yeah, probably. So there's that. But in a similar vein,
in
that means...
In addition to your subscription.
Exactly.
Your annual,
so, yeah. So that means that the older stuff, though, obviously all eventually becomes free on Prime. Our first season, and now here's the announcement, our second season... are now free on Prime. Our second season is nearly a year old, so it's actually gone to free on Prime. Season 3 is still available, and season 4 is coming soon. So that's pretty cool.
Crazy enough. Well, please rate and review the podcast as you are inclined, and rate and review the show, too, on IMDb.
All of that helps. All of it
because
does.
If you didn't know, Amazon owns IMDb outright now, and so they use that as the rating system, and you can't actually do it on your TV. You'll see a you know, whatever it is, a movie, a show, and you'll see the star, you'll see that rating,
yeah.
but you can't actually do it there, so you have to log in wherever you're at and give the ratings there, which is a different way of doing it.
You're probably logged into Amazon somehow anyway as you listen to this podcast.
I suppose you are, yes.
They rule us all pretty much, yeah.
I suppose so. Well, guys, we've got a couple of great debates here for you. We've got Patrick M. in Central Nebraska, who is saying he's currently marooned in Central Nebraska. Longtime listener. Hi, Patrick. How are you, man? He writes into us, and we've also, after the break, we've got Derek M. somewhere in Illinois, somewhere in the suburbs of Illinois.
I don't know if that means he's lost or just doesn't want to tell us for sure, but either way, there he is.
Kind of both, maybe. I'm not sure. And he's really asking, what is the best mix of cars mm-hmm. for the enthusiast? But there's some things that I want to unpack and explore here because I'm confused by some of Derek's email here, but
okay.
we'll get to that
okay.
in just a
Good.
Minute after the break. But we do want to start out with Patrick's email here, which is lengthy.
Yes. many scrolls were injured in the process of this email. Yeah, there's a lot of... He gives us some high points, which was helpful. Thank you. And then from there, you kind of went into to current cars and car background. And we go for a while. We are actually... What I take away from this is we're actually taking two cars that he likes.
Yeah.
Getting rid of both in an attempt to find something else.
Yes. And it is important to hear the background on this because it does influence our decision making mm-hmm. for Patrick here. And the background here is the fleet that he currently has, a 2011 Honda Odyssey with 95,000 miles, which he and his wife purchased brand new. He said, that's off limits. It's going nowhere because being married with three little girls under the age of 9, there's no better tool for the job. I'm inclined to agree with you, Patrick.
Yeah. I mean, you clearly are an enthusiast based on the rest of your garage, but I see you have bought a utility appliance and it works wonderfully at its job at Automotive Toaster with fantastic doors. and I see it. So there it is. That stays there. That doesn't go anywhere. There are two fun other cars, though.
Yes, he's got two black cars. One's a 98 BMW M3, so E36 M3.
Mm-hmm. Second gen M3, yeah.
5-speed, 135,000 miles. He's owned it for about 2 years, and he says, this car is spectacular. It's tasteful. It's a rare unicorn in the E36 world. He loves it.
Mm-hmm.
The other is also a black 93 Mercedes 300E 2.8, 65,000 miles, which is actually pretty low miles
Very
for those
low
cars.
For that mileage, for
and
that
he says,
year, yeah.
yes, the cliche, drives like a bank vault. It drives solidly, like things that are solid.
But here's what's interesting about this combination of cars. The M3 drives wonderfully, but is really difficult to take on a road trip because he's got it set up so it's so hardcore, it's kind of hard to take a road trip in.
Well, yeah.
And then the Mercedes is the opposite. It's not, I mean, it drives fine, but it's not an enthusiast, high-strung car. But man, is it nice to road trip in.
Yeah, he's saying an eight-hour drive in the M3 is almost unbearable for he and his wife in northwest Arkansas. You know, he's saying, we love to drive to the beautiful Ozark roads there, but unbearable because of the seats, because just the general nature of how high strung the car is, as you're saying. And he says the interior is great shape, but it's the classic cheap and, you know, not very well put together plastics in there. So
that was not not the best plastic years for BMW, honestly.
No, not really. But that does mean E36 M3s are pretty affordable. I mean,
they
for
are
a
very,
rough one, four grand. We're talking rough.
Yeah, I hear you.
But for a decent one, 10, 15, 20 will get you a really nice
20
one.
20 gets you the best one in the world. I mean, 10 is like the shopping range for the E36 M3, for sure.
I mean, I still come back to those cars, even though they're not the picks of the M3 world. You want to wait for the E46, but
that's affordable.
On the other hand, still, all right, so he's on to the Mercedes here, and he says, this is a joy. It does what it does. It's designed for the cruising thing, but the transmission ruins it because all the excitement that the engine has is neutered by these huge gaps in the gear ratios, he says, that hurts acceleration. But on the other hand, it makes for great cruising at the high speeds.
Sure, of course it does. Yeah.
And, you know, so that's the car, obviously, that they like to take. So now he comes to this point where he says, all right, I'm looking for a better combination of these cars' best attributes for a budget of $20,000 to $25,000, preferably two cars. But he said, if you can find a sniper shot that covers all the bases, then fire away. We're talking handling. We're talking manual transmission, rear wheel drive, comfortable on road trips. He loves small cars that handle well. He says, I want this engaging experience. Power is less important than that. But he loves that smooth comfort of the Mercedes, but he needs more excitement out of the car, which is why he keeps the M3. Now we come to the twist. It has to do with finances.
Okay, yeah.
He says, well, he and his wife are on track to have zero debt in 7 years. That's impressive.
Wrote into the wrong podcast. Wait, no, what?
Especially with a family, a growing family, your shampoo bills are going to be high with three girls. Well, four girls in the family.
Yes.
I mean, come on. My shampoo bills are pretty low on the other hand. But just that alone, really? Zero debt? No, I kid. However, they're looking at that and he says, no more, Paul, no more than 25 because they're looking at this plan, which kudos to you guys.
For
honestly,
sure, for sure.
This is excellent. And if you can pull that off, fantastic. So how do you do this, being an enthusiast, on a budget, combining all these refined European things that he loves about these two cars, still wanting two other cars, but then he comes to this last sentence in here and saying, I'm considering keeping the current fleet and just letting them climb in value. It's not my favorite option, but it might be the smartest option.
Yeah, but
debatable.
It's a dice roll on are those going to actually climb in value.
That's where
I
the rub
think
is, yes.
Best case scenario, those two specific cars don't lose anymore. I don't think either of them are going to gain.
I don't think they're going to gain. They might gain, Patrick, but they don't. I don't think they're going to gain what you think they will.
I don't think it's going to gain to a situation where I'm awfully glad I kept this.
Yeah, like, both of them together are not going to be worth $50,000.
No.
Might not be worth $40,000 together combined. So then you have to factor in, all right, 7 years from now, you're debt-free. Let's say that happens.
Yeah.
These cars are 7 years older from where they are now.
With 7 years more mileage, even if it's not a lot, but 7 years more mileage.
Correct. The Odyssey is thoroughly beat into a pulp. It is
Odyssey
dust
is now
in the
being
driveway.
Driven by one or possibly two of your daughters.
Yes.
Has dents on both sides, but it's still an Odyssey and the doors work. Yeah.
Right. And you've got drivers coming down the down the road there. You've got girls wanting to drive, and then you're going to be thinking about you want something safe and reliable and all that stuff. Do you consider both the hot sports cars that you have now? I say hot, but you know what I mean.
Yeah,
the European cars you have now, would you put your daughters in those cars? Mm. Or are they for you and your wife to enjoy because you love the cars? But then you think down the road, am I going to need to trade up? Am I going to get Corollas and Camrys and Civics and just Mazda 3s for the girls, whatever that is, used, of course. But then are you... are they going to be worth enough then, what you think they will then, to be able to sell them and get something for you? Your wife's still driving the trashed Odyssey. And you need
the Mad Max Odyssey now,
at least one car for the first two girls to share.
Probably. I mean, here's the other thing. He got ruined at one point. And I hate to say this, but poor Patrick got ruined at one point. He bought a 911 SC.
Yes, he did.
And he sold it for 10 grand more than he bought it for. Patrick, this is not a lifestyle. This is an anomaly.
And you did it honestly, in the right time period, too.
Honestly, because the balloon part of the 911s is actually a little bit behind us now. They're still, I would argue, more expensive than they should be.
I agree, but we're past the peak.
But we're past the major peak. It was 3 or 4 years ago when it was at its absolute peak. When we did our 50 years of 911 film, it was had almost reached the peak, but was still going up. And I think it's gone over the peak and come down a bit now.
Yeah.
You've said that made you really intrigued. And I see, you know, you're trying to be financially smart. That made you really intrigued about having another car that gains in value. Patrick, I'm going to say it to you. Get that right out of your mind right now. Because that is such an anomaly and is such a dice roll, especially if you're not buying something that is already very expensive and a one-off and special because of whatever. Okay. These two cars you have, I hate to say it, they're not unique enough to go back up. They're not.
I don't think they are.
You can get money out of now, get money out of them now. Now, you said you like small cars. You'd like to have another small rear-wheel drive car. You drove a Mazda RX-8 a while back, loved it, felt like it was the one car for everything, but you're terrified of that engine reliability, so I'm going to step away from that. You really like Miatas. I'm going to follow that path for a minute. But we're kind of shopping for two cars, one that is the more usable car and one that is the more fun car, with 25 at the most. I think the cars in your garage right now go. I see you say leave the Odyssey. Okay, all right, fine. The other two I think need to go. They're not going to be worth any more than they are right now. Let's get something else or two somethings else. And I have three pairs for you.
Three pairs?
Yes.
Six cars?
Yes, but I put them in pairs. You can mix and match, but I put them in pairs.
Interesting. Patrick, I have one car for you.
You're kidding. Well done.
I say sell both of them, and I am stepping up for your challenge. I'm hoping this will fit the one car does it all that these two do for you.
Mm-hmm.
I'm hoping it does.
All righty. What is it?
I'm also under your budget.
No kidding.
I'm working on Patrick's goal of zero debt here.
Wow.
But I want to come back to his comment about being marooned in central Nebraska. And what he means there is service. He's had to learn to do everything himself, whether it's a Bosch fuel injection on an old 91 Volvo 740 turbo wagon that he had.
Yeah.
Or whatever it is, he's got to actually dig in, roll up his sleeves, and kind of do that, because it seems like service and what he will need for these cars just isn't available.
Mm-hmm.
So I went way newer for you, Patrick.
Okay.
Way newer. I say sell the cars. We've got 25. And I went and found you a 2015 BMW M235i with 36,000 miles for $25,500.
Wow.
$25,523, which means you know they'll take 25 on the button. It's a smallish car like you like.
Yeah.
It's manual. It's modern. It's fast. It's comfortable.
Yeah, all of those things.
Great power. It can be beat on. Ask us about the pilgrimage trip and everybody we've put in those cars on the Ring and Spa.
RSR that runs a fleet of them all day, every day.
Yeah, now, they're serviced into oblivion because everybody's beating on them. But wow, they're just seeming to run and willing to take the abuse. This has a gray exterior, red interior at EMG Auto Sales in Avenel, New Jersey. They have it ready, waiting for you, my friend. I'll bet you they might even take less than 25. But let's say it's 25. Think about what this car can do. Mm-hmm. It's got back seats. It's got a real trunk. Mm-hmm. It's going to be comfortable for the Ozark road trips.
Sure. Yeah, for sure.
It's a manual transmission, and it's going to be modern enough with low enough miles 7 years from now. It's not going to be, it'll be a newish, modernish car, but 7 years from now, it's not that in that category anymore.
Sure. Fair. Yeah.
So I'm just thinking having this one car because you're going to be adding cars when the girls start driving.
Yeah, for sure.
And when you get the Jones in for something else at that point, and yeah, some other cool hatch has come out onto the market and they're now used, and I'm thinking long term for you.
I hate to say, but I think Patrick's shopping for other things between now and that 7-year mark.
I do too.
But I take your point. You've done very well.
Really done back off and consolidate. And I thought, I wonder if the M235i is going to do this. If there's not many for sale. I found four for sale manuals. Okay. There's others with a DCT. But with the manual transmission, I found four in my search so far.
It's a good manual too. Yeah.
Love it. And I think it does combine the long distance cruise thing that you love about the Mercedes. And it's got the BMW fun that you love about your current E36.
I see it.
And it's kind of E36 sized.
Yeah, it is. It's close to that. Yeah, for
that
sure.
E36 wasn't a big car.
Sure. Yeah.
So I'm leaning on that for you as a, I think you need to really consider this.
Okay.
I really do, because again, think about two cars. That's two insurance policies for both those cars.
It is, yeah.
Whatever they are. But I'm eager to hear what you've come up with, because it might be worth it.
I've got pairs. I've got three pairs. And you can mix and match, but I've got three pairs. One of the big things you said is, if it's not a Chevy product, you're going to have trouble getting it worked on locally. I hear you. I get it. So you're going to have to work on it yourself. So I thought about that. I also thought about, let's make the small car of the equation a genuinely fun car. Let's take this out for fun. And if you end up in a world where you drive to a fun road, you can do that. If you wind up somehow finding track experience or autocross or whatever, you could do that with these cars. Then I've got a second car for you that can, you know what, if you need to pick up the girls, you can. And if you need to drive for a few hours, you can do that too. So my first pair, my favorite pair, because you, Patrick, said you like the Miata and you realize you get an NC for your budget. Yes, you can. I'm shopping roughly, not on the nose, but roughly $12,000 per car here, okay, is the allotted budget for each of the
hats. Yeah, right.
Get yourself an NC. That's a third-gen Miata, but get the power retractable hardtop. Makes it much more versatile, makes it much more road trip worthy. It's a perfectly good car. Get that in manual.
You don't see those around that
often. You don't get a ton,
often.
But at $12,000 you can find one.
Oh, easy.
So NC, third gen Miata, power retractable hardtop, and for your bigger car, not a manual, but I'm going there anyway, the Pontiac G8.
Interesting.
Probably be in the V6. I doubt you're going to be in the GXP V8 for $12,000, but the V6...
Sure.
And it's a Chevy product underneath. You need to get that worked on. Hi, would you please work on my Chevy parts car?
It's true.
You don't have to wrench that car at all. And the Miata's just going to run. That NC Miata's just going to run. So there's that. My first alt.
Okay.
C4 Corvette. $10,000 all day long.
$10,000 all day long.
All day long.
You're right. Nice ones.
And that car can lope along if you want to take a long road trip. Mm-hmm. Is it a nice interior? No, it's not. It's a plastic disaster. But at the same time...
Is that a band name?
It should be. That's an 80s band name.
Plastic disaster. I love it.
They opened for Devo. Anyway, no, I'm sorry. But C4 Corvette, you can get one for cheap. You can get parts for cheap. It will just run. It will be fast. They are decently fun to drive. C4 Corvette.
Okay, I want to hear your other pairing before I ask my question.
Okay.
But go ahead.
For the more normal car of the group, still isn't normal. I still went nuts. Mazda Speed 3. Get one of those for less than 15, for $12,000. Six-speed manual. It's the definition of torque steer. It's got good back seats, a worthwhile hatch. You can hoon around with your girls in that car. There's another pairing.
The burnouts are coming out of the front end of that
car.
Isn't
that fun? Yeah, exactly. And then my last pair, I'm still shopping this $12,000 per car. Get yourself a first-gen Porsche Boxster. You like the Miata.
Okay.
Same money, you can get yourself a first-gen Porsche Boxster.
Okay, 986.
There may be some like maintenance catch-up you have to do on that car, but there's a ton of information out there and parts to get those first-gen Boxsters dialed. Okay, we had one actually coming up for season 4, and the whole time we were shooting it, the owner was looking at 101 things to do to your Boxster, this big tome of stuff you could do yourself to just dial that car in. So there's one of those. And then you can get yourself... that Acura TL we like, that late 2000s, like the 04 to 08.
That's just going to run.
Those just run, and they are genuinely fun to drive, front-wheel drive sedans, and they're good-looking. They've aged very well, less than $12,000 for one of those. I've given you 6 cars, 3 pairs, Patrick. Something's got to work.
That's impressive. I do like that, but my question is, he's a long-term car owner kind of a person.
Yes.
It's kind of what I'm gathering here.
Yes.
The middle pairing that you suggested, that C4 Corvette, which is fast.
Yeah.
And the Mazda Speed 3, the girls are going to want those cars.
Possibly.
Patrick, do you see your girls rocking the Corvette when they're 16?
Well, but...
Your oldest?
Here's the thing. My 9-year-old really, really hopes I mean, he hasn't said this, but I know what he's thinking. Let's hope the Lotus is around long enough I can drive it. I don't think that's happening, son.
Yeah.
I don't think any of these cars are going to survive that transition for Patrick. I really don't.
You know, he's going to have the story like you do with your dad's Jag E-Type growing up. Mm-hmm. He's going to have that same story about, my dad had a Lotus Elise when I was growing up, and he sold it. That idiot.
You're right. You're right. He will have
what
that story.
Was he thinking?
I'll have to get
or
him in one anyway.
Or he raffled it, or whatever.
I'll have
he did
to get him
it.
In one anyway.
It's
that's
no
that is
longer
funny.
In our lives.
You're right.
Why
you're
didn't
right.
he keep that car? Same kind of thing.
You're right.
My dad had a British car. You're doing it to your own son.
I'm my father. That's not good news.
I digress.
Yeah, that is
just,
terrible.
I'm
okay.
wondering about point. All that power, because if you do keep those cars, then yeah, Patrick, you're going to be shopping for more cars and... Mm-hmm. That might happen.
Yep.
But if you can pull it off, great.
I think he's shopping for more cars anyway between now and the next 7 years.
Too.
I think that's happening.
I think he is too. Yeah, insurance policies on those cars, they might be decent for him, but then, yeah, you're not going to be handing down the C4 Corvette to a 16-year-old.
There's nothing you can give to a 16-year-old and the insurance is affordable. It's
no.
Just, the only thing you can give them is like a skateboard.
Here's a car with a really high-strung turbo and a lot of torque steer.
I'm going to give you the app for a bird scooter. Congratulations, you're now driving. That's the only thing that is cheap for insurance for the 16-year-old.
I was in downtown Salt Lake. They're everywhere.
They are. The bird,
people
the
just leave
scooters.
Them on street corners and park them nicely, too.
That's how that's supposed to be done, yeah.
Yeah, well, yeah. In L.A., they're burning them and throwing them into the ocean.
It's all about volume,
and then
yeah.
making Instagram feeds about them, but...
Yeah, why not,
you
yeah.
know, they're all over Salt Lake now. All right, Patrick, you've got some decision-making to do. I went one direction, just one car. Todd gave you a plethora.
It's madness. This is what we do.
If you've got your own car debate with twists and turns like Patrick, please write to us, everydaydrivertv@gmail.com, or on the website. You go to everydaydriver.com, and under the About tab, top right corner, you can see Contact.
Mm-hmm.
And contact us there. Many of you do. Thank you so much.
Yes. And while you're there, check out the brand new Everyday Driver store.
Yeah.
Everything in one place. All of our movies, the TV seasons are all there, plus gear we use to shoot the show, movies we talk about, Paul's design discussion books, other random things like tire cradles if you park your car all winter. We're using our own stuff and then other stuff we've talked about that you may go, where do I find that? You can find it now from the Everyday Driver store right there on the store tab. It's very cool.
We'll take a short break. We'll be right back.
If you're looking to buy a car, you're probably familiar with the term MSRP. You might even know what that stands for, but do you know what it actually means? And how about invoice or list price or dealer price? It's enough to confuse anybody.
All you're really looking for is a price that actually means something. Introducing True Price from True Car. Now you can know exactly what you'll pay for the car you want, including fees and accessories, before you even arrive at the dealership. True Car dealers will show you the true price on cars like the one you want, all from the comfort of your house.
How do you know if your true price is a great price? Because True Car shows you what other people paid for the same car you want. And your certified dealer knows this, so they'll set their true price competitively so they can win your business.
So when you're ready to buy a new or used car, visit True Car to enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Some features are not available in all states. Hey, we've got to talk about AmSoil. You know why we like AmSoil? Because they're a bunch of car people. They're gearheads. They're into all kinds of power sports and cars, and they get it.
AmSoil has created a guide to increasing horsepower in your vehicle. It's insider tips from some of the best in the business on coaxing more power out of your engine.
You can get your copy for free at amsoil.com/driver.
Plus, you can learn how the AmSoil Signature Series synthetic motor oil delivers 75% more engine protection against horsepower loss and wear than is required by the industry standard.
So don't forget, go to amsoil.com/driver to get your free insider's guide to increasing horsepower. Derek M. is somewhere deep in Illinois, in the suburbia land
He's
of Illinois.
Lost in the jungles of Illinois.
Does Illinois have jungles?
Someone save him. No, it doesn't. That's what makes this
I think
fun.
He's writing to be saved because he's writing to us with another mix.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some clarification that maybe you've kind of read between the lines here, but I'm a little confused by somewhere in here. I'll get to that in a minute. But what he writes to us with is the single car. And the dilemma is, he's always been a buy one car that can do everything because, sadly enough, he and his fiance can only drive one car at a time. He used to have a motorcycle and a car because it costs nothing to keep a motorcycle.
Just
but
about, yeah.
Out in the jungles of Illinois, the weather is either too hot or too cold to get rid of the motorcycles. Oh, so he did get rid of the motorcycles, yeah. And after a couple of years, he had a couple of Kawasaki's like that.
Yeah, very cool.
I'm a Kawasaki alum myself, Honda CBR 250. And then he begins his history, driving his parents' Toyota Sienna van, mm-hmm. and then an 04 Scion TC, a 2010 Kia Forte EX that at the time he said was best in class everything, horsepower, interior space, and features. So he sold it and got another one, which was a mistake, apparently.
Thought it was going to be better. Wasn't better.
So yeah. I thought it would be fun, but it wasn't. $20,000 out the door, so he sold that, and he has landed on a 2013 Ford Focus RS with the Blue Vaqueros.
Not RS.
You're right, Focus. Sorry. ST. I'm reading Blue Vaqueros and I'm thinking RS.
Yes, that's
I'm thinking
fair.
Of that
that's
logo
fair.
On the back of the car. $25,000 out the door. So he still has the Focus ST,
mm-hmm.
and he said, well, you can blame Carlos Lago for this.
Yes.
Well,
cool.
Yeah.
They're cool cars. He now has 55,000 miles on that ST, and he tracks it. Let's say a half dozen times a year, 3 to 5 times a year for sure, maybe a little bit more. He has a full separate set of wheels, but also a full separate set of rotors and pads. So he redoes all four paws before he does a track day. And he's learned he has to take them back off. I've done this too. Because the last thing you want on the planet is track pads on your street car, because now you are that guy that squeals everywhere and annoys yourself and everyone around you.
You're so going to get the looks.
He does trade
Not
all
a good
that
way.
Out. Yeah, exactly. He does trade all that out. But that's making him go, okay, I'd kind of like a new experience. I'd kind of like a new track experience, ideally rear-wheel drive.
Mm-hmm.
Can I still get the one car, or should I specialize now and get something for tracking and something for commuting?
Yes, and that's where my confusion comes into play here, because okay. he's always been the buy one car, do it all, and that's
yes.
what he's asking.
Yes.
He wants one car to do it all, yet the options that it gives us start out because he just sold his condo, he lives with his fiance, and he's got a $40,000 budget, not including the Focus ST, mm-hmm. which could be traded for $12,000 or sold for $15,000, which bumps his budget to $55,000.
Yeah.
Now, he says that's the overall budget for one car or two cars, but I don't know where they've got the availability to park them.
Well, here's how I read this. I see your confusion, but here's how I read this. He recently moved in with his fiance. This has changed his parking situation. Before that, he
probably
only had
so, yeah.
one availability for one car.
Sure.
This is where the new flexibility comes from, is that move he's recently made.
Probably so.
That's
I think
how
you're right.
I read this. And
sure.
it isn't as clear as it could be. I agree with that. But that's what I read into this. And so my feeling is, okay, if Derek says I can now handle two cars, then I'll let him worry about where he parks them.
Fair enough.
So he wants Fair that enough. Track car. And he's also saying he has a car that, look, he likes to walk if he can for his commute. But every now and then – oh, no, sorry. That was a different one. Sorry. His daily commute is 16 miles.
Yes, right.
Daily commute
right.
is 16 miles, but not more than that. He puts between 10,000 and 15,000 miles a year on a car. Okay?
Yeah.
So that's what we're dealing with. We are dealing with a 16-mile commute, which is not a huge commute, by the way, which has made him look at, wait a minute, should one of these be an electric car?
He does bring that up
and
out of these four options here.
With a gas track car, which I like. It's very interesting. I have two options for electric cars and three for possible track cars, and you may even have money left over.
Well, we're in money-saving mode over here. Four options from Derek. He says, do I keep the Focus ST, and that's my daily still,
mm-hmm.
and then he gets a Miata or an 86 to be the track car. That's a valid option. That's a great
Absolutely.
Way to go.
No, it's perfectly good.
I mean, that actually frees up a lot of budget for tires and
yes.
maintenance and other stuff that you're going to want to do. You might investigate suspension over time as you get more into track. If you have a dedicated track car, I guarantee you're going to get more into it. You're going to
yeah.
want to get your money out of it and
yeah.
use it. So that is a very valid option. I do like that. And then as you said, this electric car thinking has crept into the equation where mm-hmm. he says, sell the Focus ST, get an electric car as the daily. And he names, think of the electric cars on your mind.
List.
Leafs.
The list.
Bolts. Model 3s. Model S's.
E-Golfs. You name it. Yes.
And then also, again, buy a Miata or an 86.
Mm-hmm.
Who was it that was telling us the acronym? Was it you? The M-I-A-T-A?
Yes. Yeah, Miata is always the answer. Yes, there it exists. I did not make this up. It
yeah.
just exists. There it is. Yep.
All right. So he's actually leaning towards this option because, you know, he's dealing the electric and then he's got the cheap track car.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Third option, sell the Focus ST for something large and in charge. ATS-V with a manual, Camaro SS1 LE, Chevy SS manual.
Mm-hmm.
He brings up the BMW M2 manual.
Within his budget of $50,000, certainly used ones at this point, yeah.
He's now talking Corvettes,
mm-hmm.
even though he's only driven the ATS-V automatic and a 2 Series and automatic. Well, All you're bringing up the big boys now.
All of those are really cool, I have to admit. Yep.
Then the fourth option here is, again, sell the Focus ST.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's going to sell the Focus ST. And then, you know, the electric car and buy any of the above.
It's the mix and match option.
This
yeah.
is
yeah.
go nuts mm-hmm. option, essentially.
Yep. yep.
So the criteria is rear wheel drive, manual, blue paint.
Okay. All right.
Heated and cooled seats.
That's the hard part.
This is important.
That's the hard part.
Fun to drive, track focus, decent interior, somewhat cheap to maintain. The consumables, as you know.
The track consumables can be high, yes.
Yeah. And because of the commute, 16 miles, and he only puts down 10 to 15,000 miles a year.
The heated and cooled seats is where I may have failed this, because a lot of the electric cars aren't that good at that.
The heated, cooling thing heated, more yes, so than the heated seats.
Cooled is the problem.
Yeah, that's
heated is
the
generally
problem.
Pretty common in electric cars because it's actually cheaper to heat your body than it is to heat the entire cabin in a winter day, which is why they did that. The cooled seats is less common.
Uh-huh,
okay,
yeah.
So that's the struggle there. But I'm still going to give you two options for roughly 15 grand or less for an electric car, and the rest of the budget can go to a track car of your choice. I've got three for you that I want to really recommend.
Okay.
On electric cars, again, I'm saying 15 grand or less, shop the BMW i3. This is a $45,000 rear-wheel drive electric car that the first gen have plummeted. They've plummeted mainly because they don't have great range.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But you need 16 miles of commute. They've got like 80, 90 miles worth of range. You can do your commute down and back and have range left over.
Mm, I like that.
So that gets it solved. If you want less range anxiety, you want a newer car, you could shop a newer Chevy Volt used for roughly 15 grand and find those. And then that car, if you want to keep driving it beyond the electric range, it just works.
Sure. Yeah.
So those are my electric options for you. Keeps you out of the plastic disaster that is, I'm staying with that. It's a really fun 80s band.
Works there too.
Keeps you out of the leaf. You can't, I'm not going to have you spend 35 to get a Bolt. The Bolts are cool, but don't spend that much of your money on your electric commute car.
No,
just don't.
I agree.
So that takes the Teslas off
unless
the table,
you've got a big commute and it's somebody who really...
Totally different thing.
Your
totally
situation thing. Doesn't
no,
demand
No, it's
this.
Not necessary for Derek. So this is the thing. Cheap electric commute cars, we've got that solved. I've got three track cars for you that I'm staying with. And these are my only three I'm listing for one main reason. I want you to have rear-wheel drive. And I want you to have something that is not known to be a monster on consumables.
Mm, sure.
I mean,
sure.
The big, powerful BMW products, welcome to tires and brakes every time you do a track day.
Pretty much.
The well, ATS-V, yeah, the depending. CTS-V, same kind of thing. Plus, the ATS and CTS-V are known for some overheat issues. You also don't want that.
Right, right.
So the largest consumables car I'm going with here is actually the Corvette C7. I'm not going Z06. I'm not going Grand Sport. I'm going straight up C7.
Okay.
That does not have the possible overheat issues of the Z06. It also doesn't have that monster engine. It's still weighing 3,500 pounds, which is a bit heavy, but it's not known to be the consumable monster that those big BMWs and sedans are.
Yeah, okay? Fair enough.
So there's that. That's the highest horsepower, biggest consumable car. The other two, an 86... with or without supercharger. You've got money left over. You could supercharge that car. That car doesn't fly through consumables because it's light. And then I have to go there. You're buying a dedicated track car. You, my friend, should get a Lotus Elise.
Hmm. 30 grand. You can have one.
Yes.
You know, Derek, if you go 05, Todd went with an 06 because of the seat upgrade and because of various things.
Yeah,
I think it was
things.
The LED rear lights on that
yes,
car.
Yes, and it goes
and
to drive-by-wire throttle. Those are the
that
three main
it.
Changes.
That
yeah.
was it. If you go 05, I continually come across them for 25 mm-hmm. to 28, somewhere in there.
Yeah.
You don't have to get an 06. The 2005s are the same car with the same engine.
It's a track car.
It's your track car, so you're not worried about, you know, Todd's actually driving his more. It's a daily, it's a track, it's trying to do more. It is more. But for you, this is just the track weapon, and you don't need that stuff.
No, not
so
at all.
Why not even go earlier in
sure,
the lease?
Sure, sure.
Save even more money. Just saying.
Yeah. I mean, here's the thing. With 50 grand to spend, mm-hmm. you could get an Elise for 30 all day long. Even an 06, you can get an Elise for 30 all day long. Sell it in a year for 30. But anyway, get the lease. You've got roughly 20 grand to spend on your electric car. That could get it done. But an 86 with a supercharger is going to be 30. And a C7 Corvette is probably 35 to 40. That's the more expensive one. But the other two are cheap.
Yeah, they are. No, I like your list here. And I'm coming to my own with a lot of mixing and matching, Derek.
Love it.
I think you do need to get rid of the Focus ST. You've had it. You've loved it. I think most of your options here, you're saying, how about I get rid of this car?
I think it's time.
Sounds like you're just asking for permission to get rid of it. And my friend, you have it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think it's time. Now, I went big and large to start with, but I'm going to just mention these things, and I'm going to die on this hill. You're a one-car guy, and you're wanting the one car to do it all.
Okay.
This is why the 9/11 film was made, my friend.
Okay.
I'm just
fair.
Saying.
No, fair. All right.
A 997-911 is 50 grand.
Yeah, a nice one. Yeah, a good one.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
Pretty low miles.
Yep.
You can get it in manual. It checks all those boxes, and you can take it to the track.
Yeah.
That's why 911s exist. That's their thing.
Mm-hmm.
That is their jam.
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
I had to bring it up.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I see that.
I'm just saying, 911s, but that doesn't really give you the option of getting a commute car. But again, you might not need to.
Well, I mean, he was in the single car for the world of the ATSVs and the SS and those kind of things. He was in a single car world there. I see it.
There's, yeah.
That's a worthwhile argument for sure. I see that all day.
Yeah, so I kept going from there, and I liked your Corvette suggestion, but FYI, 2015 Corvette Z06 is $55,000 with 9,000 miles, and it does have cooled and heated seats.
Fair point. Fair
Just
point.
Just saying, the Z06, the monster.
That is compelling.
Talk about something. The only thing you're going to really be paying for is tires on that car.
Yes, there will be many tires.
Otherwise, have at it.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to run. It's your track monster. It's going to do everything. You might need to invest in the winter wheel and tire set, but once you swallow that.
Yeah. And if you're not running like huge, huge sessions, it probably won't overheat. I mean, they've been known for overheating issues in really hot climates for huge, long sessions. They've had some issues.
Well, but that's why the Grand Sport exists. And everybody says the Grand Sport is the sweet spot because it doesn't have the supercharger, but has everything else that the
Z06
does.
I really like the Grand Sport, actually.
And therefore, the heating problem is sort of solved. Do we need 650 horsepower?
Need and 650 horsepower have never equated. One, sure. Laughing because of, yes.
Everybody at SEMA would say yes.
Need, no. Yeah.
But honestly, the Grand Sport is the sweet spot.
Yeah, I can see that. I can see that.
But I'm just saying, Z06s are now 55K, everyone.
Unbelievable.
I loved your BMW suggestions, and I want to do something mix and match there. But honestly, what I'm coming to is a Volt for you, because Volts used to be in the 15 to 17. I'll bet you could get one for 14, 15 now.
Early ones are better part of, they might get one for 10 or 11. Yeah.
And it's not pure electric, but for your commute, I'll bet you can get by on electric.
Probably.
And it's still a real car. You can take it cross country. You can just not have the range anxiety that we're still not quite over yet.
Yeah, depends on the car.
So I'm thinking a used Volt, and then, let it hang out a little bit, which means, my friend, you've got money left over for a Cayman. You've got money left for a Cayman S, like a 981 Cayman S for 40?
Which you find yourself just driving because.
Maybe a base Cayman?
I see it. No.
And maybe you switch off. Maybe you take the Cayman to work. Maybe you just...
First-gen Cayman S he's going to get for 25 to 30.
Yeah.
And be very happy.
I like the M235i in this equation, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. That could be, but
some
it's almost too nice to be your track car, you know? It's almost... That's also a car that could do it all. It's almost, why am I tracking this thing? Why don't I buy a beater?
Yeah.
But I like your suggestions. I like the small light. So I guess I come back to, even though I want you to go big, I want you to have a 911 and a Z06 or just something as your only.
Mm-hmm.
In this situation, I think it almost makes more sense to have a Volt and then go with an 86 or a Miata and spend the rest of that money upgrading yourself as a driver, lessons, going to track time, and buying tires and parts and pouring it into that. And
accepting consumables.
Saving money. I hate to back away from the M2s. GT350s can be had in your budget,
My
friend.
Oh, yeah, that'd be great. But
M2s, M235is, Caymans, and 911s are all in this category. The big usual suspects that
but
we
love.
But
consumables are a thing. That's the problem.
But I'm backing away from all of that. Honestly, I'm saying Volt and a Miata.
Okay. I like it.
Strange as it
I
is.
I like it. Yeah.
But that Miata is going to satisfy so much of what you want is at the track.
Yeah.
And the Volt's going to be comfortable and cool and interesting and cheap to run.
Like it. Very good. Very good. Derek, hopefully we've found something for you. Let us know if you what you end up with. And again, if you guys have got your own car debate, we are listening. We do read them all, even if we don't cover them all. One of the two of us reads them all when they come in. Thank you for sending them in. We love that. This is what makes the show. We've got more live car debates coming up as well, so please write it across the board. We look forward to covering those. We should do some social media questions.
We've got a ton. Absolutely. There's a bunch in here from BRGZR on Instagram. On the rare occasion when we've been driving at a high rate of speed and you encounter law enforcement, how did you handle the situation and what was the outcome? Well, the outcome is a ticket. The outcome is outgo, as a matter of fact, yes. In the form of money.
The pay to play, yes.
But honestly, with law enforcement, if you're caught, it's better not to lip off. It's better not to be snarky and rude and all those things, but say, you know what? I have a fast car. And I'm an enthusiast.
Yeah.
You could bring up and work into the subject matter like we have with our local law enforcement, and that is, theoretically, somebody driving a hot car at a high rate of speed is paying more attention and a better driver and more in tune.
I would never bring that up, though,
that
personally.
Usually never really flies with the police, unless they're car enthusiasts and they kind of get it.
But I will say,
it's there as an underlying current, but for the most part, you need to swallow hard and get ready for the beating.
I mean, here's the thing. Driving fast is different than driving reckless.
Absolutely.
Now, sometimes
they
the ticket...
They can go hand in hand.
Sometimes the ticket is the same. Sometimes the ticket is looked at the same.
Yes.
But if you drive fast but not recklessly and get pulled over for driving fast and are then respectful, you will get through the situation not clean, but better than you would have if you were driving recklessly and then were a jerk. That's going to go all bad.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. I agree.
Ted Theologian wrote in on Instagram, and he has an interesting question that then leads me to a different thought that we should bring up.
Okay.
He said, have we heard about potential engine recall for the very early FRS BRZ models? I have not, but okay. Theoretically, it's 12 hours of labor at the dealer. Would we trust a dealer to do this? I'm going to say two things to you. If there is a recall on the engine, yes, let the dealer do it, because they're doing it under – you don't have to pay for it. They're doing it under warranty, and if they break it and make it worse, it's their problem to fix again.
Sure.
Now look in and dig into who are the dealers, who has the best service areas. Dig into all of that stuff. Don't go to the place that has terrible ratings for its service. Don't go there.
Right.
If you can get your warranty work done at an independent, I love independent mechanics. But a lot of times there's something this involved.
They want you back. The dealers don't care as much. They do.
But for something this involved, like we're doing a massive recall, the dealer is probably where you're going to need to wind up. So then shop your dealers nicely. But that reminds me of what's going on with the Miata. And I want to bring this up.
Oh,
because it was mentioned to us a while back.
We touched on this.
Right around the time that you and I were talking about it, it was mentioned to us. I think it was Blake that emailed in. And then I've heard it mentioned a couple other places in the last like week where people were like, what are you talking about? So I want to clarify. I want to do this really quickly. The latest gen Miata, the ND, the current Miata, has its own – I'm going to coin it this way. It has its own IMS issue. You know, the IMS issue that apparently is striking all Porsches but yet is blown way out of proportion? Miata has its example, okay?
Yeah.
The early current-gen Miatas have transmission issues. Now, I say have, but that doesn't mean all of them. There is a notable percentage. It is typically early build dates. The second gear decides it doesn't want to be a gear anymore, and it destroys itself and takes the transmission with it. Now, some people have said that is only cars that people have tracked. Other guys have been like, all I ever did was commute. What the heck happened? So here's what I know to be true. And I have actually asked local Miata owners. We know a couple guys that have ND Miatas, and I've asked them at length. Mazda is trying to solve this problem. Back to the FRS BRZ getting a recall. Mazda is trying to solve this problem. They know, okay, this is manual gearboxes only, the six speeds. They are on generation four of the transmission for this Miata.
Yep.
The fourth transmission.
Crazy.
Now, we have a guy that just bought a new one in the last year. His car came with transmission four and has been flawless, though he is being very aware. We have another guy who bought an early gen, and he has had two transmission replacements because the first time it did anything weird, even before it had a real issue, he had a new one put in, and then Mazda said, no, we're doing a version four. He's had that one put in, and that seems to be running well. I say all of that to say, if you are an enthusiast buying an early fourth-gen Miata, be aware this problem exists. It doesn't mean it's a guarantee, and it also means that Mazda is working on a solve. And we think by version 4, they've found a solve.
Exactly. All right, Ryan R. over here on Facebook. Ryan, thanks for writing. Asks us, what are some cars that were groundbreaking when they came out but have not aged well? Well, it's the cars that we tease all the time, and it's the retro era from the late 90s, early 2000s. And I say they're groundbreaking because the car companies tried it. They tried it out.
Oh,
they tried out the retro thing on the public to see, would it sell? They sold some. And they promptly left retro in the dust. Retro will never be seen again in my lifetime.
That's interesting.
At least I hope not. And maybe retro will mean, hey, remember all those crazy lines and arcs and shapes we used to do?
Yeah.
Let's bring that back of, you know, this era. But you know what I mean by retro going to the, hey, they don't make them like they used to era of, you know, early Fords and, you know, big cycle fenders, big balloon shapes, you know, overly emphasized headlights and taillights and
the
all that
PT
kind of stuff.
Cruiser.
Yeah.
Was an idea.
The Prowler is a big one.
Yeah.
The PT Cruiser was another one. The Chevy HHR, high heritage roof, on and on and on. All those retro things, the Chevy SSR that could tow a couple of sheets of paper.
But it was a convertible pickup because we needed one of those.
Yeah. All that stuff. That was tried as a let's sell cars based on that very much. Cars are still sold by style, certainly. But this drove everything about it, and therefore a lot of things were ignored, like, is it a good car to drive?
Yeah.
Is it built well?
Yeah.
Can it actually do the things a pickup truck does? I think we've been there, and that's firmly in our rearview mirror. Those have not aged well, and that business thinking has not aged well. So we're not going to see that anymore. And with autonomy and new design directions being based on function or a theme, that's what I continue to see in car companies moving forward. I don't see a look back anymore unless it's by technology. You know, Mazda bringing the rotary back in a different capacity, that kind of thing.
Sure, okay.
But I don't see, you know, with the way cars are built, you know, maybe assembled in seven separate sub-assemblies, you know, and they're snapped together or adhesives or all of that kind of stuff is continually being explored for speed, for, you know, all this, all these different reasons. But I don't see us looking back to design cars anymore.
Okay, let's hope not. Mark Yen 501 had a good question. I don't have a way to specifically quantify this, but I want to see if I can clarify. He's asking if modding out of class has a different standard based on the car you're talking about. And you're talking
about
price. Here's the thing. Yes, I fully believe that it does. Modding out of class, where we talk about you shouldn't spend so much money you could have gotten the next car up, okay? That also relates directly to the original price of the car we're talking about. And I'm going to – this is not a hard and fast rule, so don't hold me to it. But I'm going to say if you're spending more than 30% of what the car cost you, you're now modding out of class. That's very different if you bought a $100,000 car than if you bought a $20,000 car because the parts are more expensive and the next class up is farther out of reach. If you buy a $25,000 or $30,000 FRS and you put $10,000 into that car, what could you have bought for $40,000 or $45,000?
Very much so.
But if you buy a $50,000 whatever, $50,000, let's say, let's go this way. You buy a $60,000 brand new Corvette and you put 10 into it. You're not in really a different class at $70,000. Not really.
Sure.
Okay. So it's where is the next class? And as you get into a more expensive car, the next, and this is also a kind of a fuzzy reality, but the next class of vehicle is even farther up. But I'm going to say if you're spending 30% of the original car's value that you just bought over and above the car you bought, you're now modding out of class. What are you doing? Buy the more expensive car you can get for that amount of money.
No, I like that. There's a question from Oshada on Instagram asking, when should you replace paint protection film and what's the best way to remove it? I've been told 3 to 5 years. 5 years kind of at the top end, unless you just decide, you know what? The car is not, I'm not going to get that done anymore. I'm not going to pay to do that again. It's looking okay. I'll just keep going. But if you want to freshen it up and you want to take it off or whatever for any reason, I've heard and have been told 3 to 5 years, especially for wraps. You know, if you change the color, 5 years is sort of like, maximum, let's take it off right there. And then best way to remove it, correct me if I'm wrong, but it's like a sticker, like you're pulling a sticker at an angle kind of thing, slowly, carefully.
There's heat involved as well if you do it right.
Yeah, I agree.
We are not those guys, by the way. We're not those guys. Paint protection film but my guys. Understanding is that it's yes. heat related as well.
But yeah, definitely consult your local paint protection film expert.
Do not do it because the guys on Everyday Driver said, we do it like this. Don't do that. Please don't do that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, a number of you are also asking about the Veloster N, at least three of you that I can see. That was at SEMA. Hyundai is mm-hmm. making a huge noise at SEMA.
Yeah.
They brought the Telluride from Kia. They brought the Stinger. They brought a huge booth. I mean, Ford and Chevy and FCA all have theirs. Mm-hmm. Honda's got a corner. Hyundai's was every bit as big.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it was impressive. Yeah. And I'm thinking to myself, the N versions of every car need to come here for the enthusiasts. Okay, maybe the sales numbers aren't going to be there, but mm-hmm. there will be some, and I feel like Hyundai's doing it right. They're simple. They're not fussy. They're not overly done. The buttons and switches, well, they just make sense. They work. They're not the fanciest thing ever.
Yeah.
They're not the most, you know, whatever it is, you know, the highest level of tech you can buy and fussiest BMW tech, but they work, and they just seem so focused, and they just seem like they're picking up the slack that they've observed all these enthusiast sports car companies have left behind.
Interesting point.
They're picking it up.
Interesting
and they're doing their own spin. And I say, bring it. I can't wait. You're right, guys. We need to be in the Veloster N. We need to be in the N product. Mm-hmm. They need to N-ize everything in their lineup.
We need it. Yeah.
Well, guys, we will end things there. Thank you so much for your questions. We're off to do more traveling mm-hmm. because we've got to wrap things up for season 4. A lot more coming at you. Keep writing to us. Looking forward to it. Cheers.
Geico presents eyewitness interviews with inanimate objects.
This is Brian Bruno live on the scene of a recent windstorm. Here to describe the event, a chest of drawers.
There's a storm howling outside, so I thought I'd stay in and watch a rom-com. 5 minutes into the flick, a tree branch slams through the window.
Were you hurt?
I just got a scratch on my chest.
Your chest of drawers can't help you in a windstorm, but the Geico Insurance Agency can help you get covered for personal property damage. Call Geico to see how affordable homeowners insurance can be.
ADT can design and install a smart home just for you, backed by 24/7 protection. A new smart home at your service, customized for your lifestyle. Set up custom automations unique to your home to automatically do the things like lock the doors or set the thermostat when you leave. Even close your garage door from virtually anywhere. ADT will set up your home with multiple smart home devices and security features like indoor and outdoor cameras, locks, lights, and garage door control, even video doorbells. Visit ADT.com/podcasts to learn more about how ADT can design and install a secure smart home just for you.